PC recordings have started.
Thank you very much, Veronica. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the GSO NextGen RDS PDP call on August 17, 2016. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call taken, as we have quite a few participants. We'll be taking attendance purely via the AV room. If you're on the audio bridge today, please let yourself be known now by speaking into the phone and announcing your name.
Jeff Noakes with Symantec.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Anyone else? Thank you. As a reminder also to the participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Also, please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll hand it over to Chuck. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you very much, Natalie. Much appreciated. Welcome everyone to this call today or tonight, whatever time it is for you. I see a lot of people in Adobe that have very undesirable times. Thanks to all of you for joining in the middle of the night. I appreciate that. I hope we have a few people on the call that are benefiting from the alternate time today. I know some of our regulars aren't on right at the moment from the Asia Pacific area. You can see the agenda on the upper right there in Adobe. We've already done the roll call, and so I will open it up and ask if there are any statement of interest updates. Please let us know if you have a statement of interest update. Okay, not seeing anyone. Before we go to agenda item number two, if anyone has any comments or question on the agenda, feel free to communicate those now. Okay, let's jump right into the agenda and let me into item two, a review of the draft problem statement that has been distributed. Again, I want to thank all the members of the little working group that developed that statement. If we can bring that up into Adobe, that would be great. Alex has volunteered to go over that with us. I think it's short enough that everybody can read, but Alex, I'll let it be your call whether you want to read through the whole thing or just discuss it. It's short enough that it's okay if you'd like to read it and then comment on it. It's your, you're up, Alex. Make sure you're off mute.
Thanks. Hi, Chuck. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I won't read this. This is Alex Deakin for the record. I won't read this word. I will say that it took a little bit of time for the team to kind of get on the same page, get a common understanding of what we needed to write, and we ended up with what you see on the Adobe Connect before you. I'll just summarize kind of where we ended up, and once I'm done, I'm happy to take any questions. Really, you know, in the first paragraph, we just described that we were tasked with, you know, the RDS working group is really tasked with defining the policies associated with an improved RDS that meets the needs of the existing and ever-evolving internet. You know, we agreed that really the core problem that needs to be solved is really resolving the tension among the varied and competing views of the stakeholders within ICANN, while accounting for rules and regulations and laws that vary widely from region to region. This is kind of the core problem that we've been tackling and I assume we'll be tackling moving forward. the second paragraph really describes how, you know, we all the stakeholders have a vested interest in an RDS system which contains accurate, complete registration data and which is secure, performant, resilient, accessible, and auditable. And then this paragraph goes on to say how, you know, there are distinct requirements around data, what data should be collected, when it can be viewed. We talk about the desire for anonymity and privacy, and sometimes these are at odds amongst the stakeholders. And then finally, we end up basically saying that in order to support each stakeholder, each constituency within the future RDS fairly and programmatically, you know, we're required to review the purposes of the DNS and the purpose of the RDS which supports it. And understanding that will enable us to ensure the policies that we come up with enable an effective RDS and define a secure and safe environment for commerce and communications, which is really the, you know, the basis of the internet, if you will, as a whole. So that's where we ended up. I think, well, I know the members of the team, the subgroup, were happy with that, and which is why we felt it was time finally to send it to the full working group. So I'll stop there and open it up for questions if there are any.
This is Chuck. Thank you very much, Alex, for the good introduction to this. And let me first ask if there's anybody else that was on the small working group that would like to comment on this. Please raise your hand. Or if you're not in Adobe, speak up. Okay. Not seeing anyone or hearing anyone. Let's go ahead and open it up for discussion by the full working group. Anybody on the call? Comments, questions? Jim, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Jim Galvin for the transcript. I do have three questions, but if I see another hand pop up, I'll pause and move to the end of the line here so that others can speak. So my first question here, do I understand correctly in reading this text that anonymous users are not actually a stakeholder? It seems to suggest that they're not.
Alex, this is Chuck. Would you like to respond, or anybody else in the small group?
Yeah, this is Alex. Yeah, I don't believe the intent was to leave them out or to exclude them. So there could be updates suggested or made to address that point.
Okay, thank you. I won't wordsmith here. It's just good to know there was no intention to exclude them. Another clarifying question. In the last paragraph, there's a phrase, you know, requires us to review the purposes. I assume us is the working group, but since we're busy talking about stakeholders and constituencies and such, I just wanted to be clear about that and wondered if we could update that, if I've got that right.
Yeah, again, if this is Alex, if it's unclear which us we're talking about, then we could fix it. I mean, really, the us here is the working group itself, because this is a problem that we've defined and we've been tasked to address. So again, we could fix that also.
Okay, thank you. I'm wondering why the purpose of the DNS became important in this. Could you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, hi, this is Alex. Well, I'm not too sure I could expand on that. I do see why you would raise that as a question or ask us to end on it. It seems Well, it would seem to me that, you know, the RDS is an important part of the domain name system. So understanding the purpose of both the DNS helps us understand the purpose of RDS. But again, I think if there's confusion or disagreement there, I'd be happy to hear updates or suggestions on how to clarify that. And I can't speak for the rest of the team, but I think if that needs to be clarified, that would be something else we could do.
Yeah, so I'll just briefly state and then look for some other discussion from others. It surprised me to see that in there. It's not at all obvious to me why that needs to be a part of this. I mean, I do appreciate that to the extent the domain name is considered an element of registration data and thus part of the RDS, that it feeds the DNS, but it's not clear to me why that the purpose of the DNS is an important part of drawing that domain name out of the registration data system. And with that, I'll just pause and hear what others have to say. Thanks.
This is Chuck. Thanks, Jim, and thanks, Alex. And we'll come back to the suggested, the three items before we're done with this. But let me turn it to Alan.
Thank you very much. I also had a concern with the reference to the purpose of the DNS. The DNS is a far more with respect to what we're talking about. The DNS is far more constrained, and we've already seen a number of examples where people seem to be confusing the two and saying if something is not needed in the DNS, it's not needed in the RDS. So make the reference to the DNS here, I think, obfuscates things and will make our job harder, not easier. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. This is Chuck again. Andrew, I get you dropped your hand, so I assume either your point was made. Hopefully you haven't had the drop off or fall asleep already. But certainly if you have something to say, you're welcome to say it. So go ahead, Alex.
Yeah. I would be fine if addressing people's concerns would be simply to remove, you know, that purpose of the domain name system, and I think that would be an easy fix that I'd be okay with.
This is Chuck. Is there anyone who would object to removing the purposes of the domain name system and? Okay, not hearing or seeing anybody. Why don't we now? If staff could create a red line of the changes. It doesn't have to be shown right now. If you can show it right now, that'd be fantastic. But if that's possible, good. If not, we can live with it. But after the meeting, it would be good if we had, or maybe even later in the meeting, if a red line could be distributed, that would be fantastic. Andrew, go ahead.
Thank you. I guess this is sort of a meta point, but how constraining on what we're doing is this problem statement? I'm really worried that that this becomes a reference document by which future disagreements are adjudicated. And if that's the case, then this becomes a super important statement to get perfect. And if it's really instead just a sort of aspirational guidepost for us, and when we run into something that doesn't conform to this, then we can say, oh, okay, you know, yeah, I get it. The problem statement isn't perfect, then we don't have to get it exactly right. There are two ways to run this kind of working group or any kind of working group, and that is to cleave strictly to a problem statement that it develops. In which case, this statement is like super important to get exactly right. Or we could just, you know, have like, this is an aspirational thing and it's roughly what we think we're talking about, but it doesn't become a club by which we can beat people who have objections. And I'm not sure which way it's going to go. And maybe that's my uncertainty. The reason that you've seen my hand go up and down a couple of times is because I'm not sure exactly what the force of this problem statement is going to be. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. This is Chuck. And I'm really glad you did ask the question because it's a great question. And let me say that we are constrained by the charter because the charter has been approved by the GNSO Council. And the council, of course, representing the broader GNSO participants in the GNSO. So we're constrained by the charter, but we're not constrained by this problem statement. Now, the purpose of doing this problem statement really came about in our face-to-face meeting in Helsinki when quite a few people thought it would be helpful for the working group to formulate a problem statement. In my own opinion, I certainly welcome disagreement on that, on what I'm going to say, but in my own opinion, this is the latter of what you said, Andrew. In other words, this is an aspirational statement in fulfilling our charter. So I think we need to be that this problem statement needs to be consistent with the charter, at least not inconsistent. And but it's not something we're bound to, like we are the charter. Now the charter, and you'll hear me say this many times, charters can be changed, but to do that we have to go through a process and go back to the GNSO Council to get charter changes. So hopefully that answers your question. Certainly if somebody disagrees with my assessment there, you're welcome to do so. Rod, you're up.
Yeah, I was just going to agree with you there, Chuck. I too took your meaning for this problem statement as more of a clarification and a tool for people to use to understand what we're trying to do rather than as a set in stone, we have to hit this mark. And I have the same concerns Andrew does about people beating others over the head with the problem statement if we don't clarify that. So I would propose that we might add some text either to this problem statement or somewhere that would say that this problem statement is, you know, as a working tool, an aspirational goal, whatever verbiage we want to come up with, but make it clear that it is not the be-all, end-all of what we're trying to do and that the charter is the guide. Thanks. And this is Rod Rasmussen for the record. Thanks.
Thanks, Rod. Chuck again. And Marina had pretty good language in the chat, which you referred to, I think, a little bit just now. And so we could add that kind of as an add-on sentence. Before we start doing any editing, let me go to Alan.
Thank you. This is going to be a Me Too statement, but I'll give a reason why. I participated in a good number of other groups where we developed things that might be called principles. Sometimes they went by other names, and they were developed somewhat informally. But then months later, when someone said something, it would be ruled out of order, essentially, because it violated one of the principles. And they become cast in concrete with gold plating. And I think the words you gave to answer Andrew have to be engraved in stone and put on a plaque over the door or something like that to remind us that we can't use something that was developed somewhat informally along as part of the process to suddenly be the golden rule that we have to adhere to. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Chuck again. So working backwards, and I'll ask staff to help me here. I'm thinking that maybe a paragraph at the end, although it wouldn't have to be at the end, it could be at the beginning, along the lines of what Rod suggested and what Marina wrote in the chat, if staff could capture that as part of the red line document, that would be good. Going back then to some of the concerns that were raised by Jim and others, there didn't seem to be any objection to deleting the purposes of the domain system and, okay, I threw the and in there because that would need to be deleted as well. So that could be a red line. And then it's an easy edit, if no one objects, in that last first sentence of the last paragraph, to replace us with the working group. So that just that'll remove any possible ambiguity. That's really I think a simple edit to make. And Jim, I'd like you, and you can do this while we're talking, and do it in chat if you like, or if you'd prefer to do it afterwards, we can. It'd be nice if we could do it during the call, just to ensure that there's no objections on the call itself. But if you can come up with some suggested rewording or editing for the first concern you raised, that would be very much appreciated. Now, you heard me say that I think this has to be consistent with our charter. And I noted just one area where I thought it was a simple edit needs to be made, and it's in the very first sentence. And because it's not up on the screen right now, I'll read the first sentence. It says the next generation registration directory service PDP work group has been tasked with defining the policies associated with an improved RDS that will meet the needs of the existing and ever-evolving global internet. I would suggest the following edit there, which I think makes it consistent with our charter. So after has been tasked with, right on the first line on the screen there, I would add, determining whether a new RDS is needed and, comma, if so, comma, defining the policies, et cetera. So if you go back to our charter, you'll recall that one of the first big decision we have to make, and this we'll grapple with that after dealing with the first five questions, is whether or not a new RDS is needed. Now, I'm sorry, you've heard me say this a lot. You'll hear me say it again. I understand fully, and I'm one of those too, that probably already believes I know the answer to that question, but still that's the way our charter is worded, and I think it would be helpful to add that to the first sentence. Andrew, go ahead.
While I agree that it would be great to put that in the first sentence, as a friendly amendment, I'd like to move it to the end of the sentence, so that we do all of the analysis as a primary goal, and then evaluate whether a new RDS is needed, thereby setting up the requirements for determining the need, and then saying, who is sucks, rather than making the determination first. It's mostly a style thing, though. So I don't feel strongly about it.
Thanks, Andrew. This is Chuck, and I don't have any problem with your suggestion at all. So I think it would then the sentence would read as it is, and then we'd modify my edit just a little bit and say, if it is determined, or if the working group determines that a new RDS is needed. I think that's what you're saying. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. And we sort of added it as a throwaway on exactly the principles that you were suggesting, that once you've sort of set up the actual requirements, then it becomes sort of a, be honest, conclusion. So I admit that I've got a bias here, but that it becomes a foregone conclusion that you actually need a new thing because the existing one doesn't. But I'd rather not sort of front load that so that people can't later claim, oh well, wait a minute, you didn't do this complete decision tree about which technology is required before you decided what things were supposed to appear in it. I'd rather, you know, all of the discussion about what we need from the system be primary, and then, you know, and how you deliver that to be secondary, because I think the secondary step becomes sort of self-evident once we evaluate what we're doing. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. Chuck again. Let's go to Lisa, and then we'll go to Stephanie.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. So just a subtlety, I guess, that our charter actually does require us in phase one to establish the requirements for an RDS and whether a new system is needed to fulfill those requirements. But we don't actually define policies unless a decision is taken that a new RDS is needed. So it is not probably accurate or consistent with the charter to say that we define the policies first and then decide if a new system is needed.
So this is Chuck, and Andrew said he wasn't hard-nosed about this. That wasn't his term, but about the change. But I'm not necessarily sure that if we put the if at the end, it means we do the other first. I think the condition is a condition, whether it's in the middle or at the end. But again, I'll go with the majority feeling on this. I do think we need to have that qualification in there somewhere. So let's hear what Stephanie has to say, and then we can decide that.
Oh, thanks, Chuck. Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I hope you can hear me. I just want to express my worry, and I don't have words to fix it, about the expansiveness of that, or perhaps I should say of that statement that says we've been tasked with defining the policies associated with an improved RDS. That will meet the needs of the existing and ever-evolving global internet. Given the number of fairly intractable problems on the existing evolving global internet, that's a tall order, I would suggest. You know, we're not going to solve all the cybercrime issues and all of the privacy issues, and, you know. So I'd just like to mitigate that bold challenge that we've set ourselves somewhat. Possibly the famous weasel words, to the extent possible. But meeting the needs of the evolving internet seems like a wide open door to me. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. This is Chuck. I think you make a good point. I'm not sure this really solves the problem. I mean, obviously, the ever-evolving global internet needs are way beyond the scope of our working group. So I think your point's valid. What if we were to put a qualifier in something like the domain name needs or maybe applicable domain name needs of the existing and ever-evolving global internet? Would something like that cover it, in your opinion?
It would certainly make me feel a little more comfortable. It's just too wide open a door at the moment. Like half the house has just got blown away, you know?
Yeah, and this is Chuck, and that's a good point, and I think it's a valid point. And I suspect that the small group didn't intend it to be beyond the scope of this work. I know they didn't. I don't have any doubt in that at all. So I think it's probably a relatively easy fix, or at least we can make it sound a little more comfortable and accurate. Jim, go ahead.
Thank you, Jim Galvin, for the transcript. I made a suggestion in the chat room for this particular issue where I said, you know, change meet the needs to meet the needs, you know, as described further below. My intent there was to recognize that we do use phrases like fairly and pragmatically with their varied priorities later on. That's down in the last paragraph. And, of course, resolving the tension among the varied and competing views. I mean, I think there are, as we are so fond of calling them, weasel words in other places already in this charter. So I think Stephanie makes a good point, and we just need similar kind of weasel words there at the top, either pulling something up or just referring to what's already described below. That was one thing. Second thing is I just wanted to call out to you, Chuck. I made a comment in the chat room, too, that the change that I believe it was Lisa, and if it was someone else, I apologize, but thank you for this. My first concern that I had raised in the beginning is answered by changing the aforementioned to the word other. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim, and thanks for calling my attention to the chat because I haven't been able to keep up with it very well the last few minutes while I've been trying to lead this discussion, so appreciate that. And I'll let Lisa or Marika, whichever one's doing it, capture that the aforementioned change. Let me ask Stephanie. Stephanie, does Jim's suggestion work for you? Making a reference to the
yes, I think so. Why don't we do it offline, though? We don't need to hammer out the words here. I think we can get that worked out pretty quickly on list.
Normally, I would agree with you. If we can do it in a brief amount of time, I kind of like to show the changes so we at least get a level of concurrence on this call, not final concurrence. So, does anyone object to the change that Jim suggested? Okay, so let's see what we've got here. Everybody take a look at that first sentence. We still need the conditional clause in there. Oh, no, it's in there where I put it. Do people – Lisa, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to point out, since I had to pick one of them to put in the red line, I chose your original proposal, Chuck, but if we want to modify that, that would be the open item.
Thanks, Lisa. Chuck, again, do people have a preference where it's at or at the end per Andrew's suggestion? Anybody have a preference? Andrew?
Well, so I do have a preference that let's see if I can do this. Given that it's kind of late, to just move that determining whether a new RDS is needed, sort of end of that entire bit. So tasked with defining the policies associated with an improved RDS that will meet the needs as described further below, maybe in parentheses, I don't care, of the existing and ever-evolving global internet and determining whether a new RDS is needed to satisfy that or something along those lines. The idea is that, you sort of front-load the requirements of what it is we're trying to do and then decide what the technology is. Maybe it's just a fetish of mine that I'm concerned about, worrying about the technology first and then the consequences of that later. And perhaps the reason for this is that, a lot of the discussion so far has frequently foundered on, this is how you can do it in the who is now. And it always feels to me like, we want to know what problem it is you're trying to solve, and then we can fix it with some technology. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. So he's the only one besides Lisa, I think, that expressed a preference on this. Anybody want to break the tie there? Again, I can go either way. I don't think it's terribly significant whether it's if we move it to the end. One thing I would suggest, though, I'm not sure, and I didn't think of that until we're looking at this right now in this meeting. But do we really need that of the existing and ever-evolving global Internet? Does that add any real value here? And maybe I want to ask Alex to comment on that. Is that an essential part of that sentence, especially with the changes that have been made as described further below?
This is Alex. Is it an essential part? I don't know, but I think just reading the sentence, defining the policies associated with an improved RDS that will meet the needs as described further below. I'm not too sure. I think that needs some cleaning up. Again, whether we do that here or on list or elsewhere, I guess, could be debated.
Okay.
I think my point, as I mentioned in the chat earlier, is that, you know, the policies that that we define and that may make its way into an eventual RD system will be in place and impact, you know, the ever-evolving global Internet for the next, 20 to 30 years or longer. So I guess what I wanted to do, or what I suggest what we wanted to do there, was to make sure people kept that in mind and our policies didn't constrain artificially somehow, you know, future uses and innovation of the Internet.
So I guess it's Chuck again. Thanks, Alex. I'd be a little more comfortable with if we put the domain name needs as described further below of the existing and ever-evolving global Internet, so that we narrow it to domain names rather than the global Internet. As long as we restrict it to the domain name needs of the ever-evolving global Internet, I'm a little more comfortable. And getting back to the breadth of the statement that Stephanie expressed concerns on. But again, I'm not trying to dictate what that says. So why don't you put that in parentheses there, Lisa, if you're the one that's doing the red line, the domain name needs. And then we can take it on the list as to whether we leave that determining whether a new RDS is needed either in the middle, like it or before the defining policies, or after. I'm comfortable either way. And just glancing at the chat, I don't think anybody's expressing strong opinions there, so let's not spend any more time on that. Taking a look at the red lines that are done, understanding that we still there were some edits made in the second paragraph. Jim, did those take care of your first point? I haven't had a chance to study those, so they may not.
This is Jim Galvin. Yes, Chuck, I'm good.
You're good. Okay, thanks. Appreciate that. Andrew, did you have another comment?
Sorry, old hand, but I was trying to write in the chat this very thing, which is that you could just move that determining whether a new RDS is needed right to the end of that sentence. You know, after ever-evolving global Internet and determining whether a new RDS is needed, period, and it would work.
Okay. Anybody object to that? Now is your opportunity. And, again, we can change this on the list afterwards, but if we can get a pretty decent document, it'll facilitate to put out to the full list. What we will do is probably carry this forward to our meeting next week to finalize it and have discussion on the list in the meantime. But if we can have a pretty reasonable red line to start with leaving this meeting, that would be, I think, very helpful. So, Lisa, why don't you move that to the end? The wording's got to be changed a little bit, I think, to move it to the end, the exact wording. probably doesn't work. Certainly we don't need an if so. But if you could do that on the red line, that would be great. And I don't think we're going to spend too much more time on this, but let's see if we've got a good red line draft and staff can clean it up later. Is any other suggested edits or comments before we wrap up this agenda item? Okay, so Chuck's still speaking, and we will go with this red line, and the action item is to distribute that to the entire list for discussion with the goal of finalizing this, understanding that last added paragraph, okay, which we will emphasize in our meeting next week. Lisa, you had your hand up and it's down. I assume you're okay now, but certainly speak up if you have something to add. Go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Lisa Pfeiffer, for the record. Just one minor point. The beginning of the second paragraph, there's a reference to individual registrants, and I read this as meaning in all registrants, whether they're individuals or businesses or other kinds of organizations. Would that be a true statement, Alex?
Go ahead, Alex, if you want to respond to that.
Yeah, sorry, Lisa, I was distracted. Could you repeat that?
My question is about the phrase individual registrants. I don't, in the beginning of the second paragraph, I don't think you meant to limit that to registrants that were individuals, but any kind of registrant.
So in other words, could we delete the word individual?
Intellectual property owners and individual registrants. Yeah.
Point being, there are plenty of registrants that are businesses or nonprofits or other kinds of organizations as well, not just individuals.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we could delete that.
Thanks. And again, anybody else who's on the group, if you have a comment on that, please let us know. Okay, so we'll delete the word individual. Okay, good work. And you know, I want to compliment the group because, you know, we've made some edits here, but I don't think we changed the thrust of what you were saying in that second paragraph and even in the last paragraph, which really is a goal for us as we do our work in fulfilling the charter to work together and to try and find solutions to our competing needs and differing interests and so forth. So I think you did a really good job of communicating that. So you certainly get my compliments on the work that you did. Okay, let's move off of that. We have an action item from there. And let's go continue our review of some example use cases. And the first one's going to be reputation services. The first three are going to be by Rod. And those may be the only ones we get to today because of not only time, but available writers of the use cases on this particular call. We will continue discussing use cases the next two meetings, and my own personal goal is hopefully we can wrap it up in the next two meetings, which would be on the 23rd and 30th. That doesn't mean we couldn't consider a new use case later on if we discover there's value in that, but if we can shoot for wrapping up our discussion of use cases the 23rd and 30th, and we already have a few use cases lined up for both of those meetings. So, all right. So, hopefully the first use case here is being brought up right now. And Rod, when it comes, you can start before it comes up if you're comfortable with that. But if you want to wait, that's okay too. Just let us know.
It looks like it just came up, so I guess I don't have to worry.
Okay,
Rod Rasmussen. Rod Rasmussen here. So took a few use cases we'd used in the EWG that people have asked me about, and I kind of dusted them off a little bit, updated a couple things, and submitted those so people could take a look at that. I think these overlap to some extent some of the things that were already mentioned, but given the conversations on the mailing list, this first one in particular, I want to make sure people realized how extensively information contained in the current WHOIS system and then potentially even in a better, more efficient, controlled, et cetera, way you can do that with an RDS that's actually, you know, 21st century technology to do these kinds of operations that that are very large scale. And I'm talking millions of domains are examined daily by the large AV companies, AV being antivirus and other companies like that, or anti-spam companies, to tens of thousands or so domains being examined and treated for some sort of reputation by individual security companies, and then baked in, I didn't even get into this in the use case, but baked into security gear, whether it be next generation firewalls and things like that. When you're having communications with a host name or domain name you've never seen before, some of these things will automatically do things to bring in context around that. Whether that's simply, gee, was this registered yesterday, to more complex things that are covered here, which would be taking a look at known patterns of abuse or you know, what we call reputation in the industry. That could be, reputation could be either good or bad, by the way. In the context of security, it's typically bad reputation you're looking for. But in the email context, for example, a good domain reputation is used to allow email to flow without getting further checks or scrutiny that you would otherwise do for something that is either what we call, you know, everybody's familiar with blacklists. We also have these things called gray lists, which mean that you get further processing involved and will slow down delivery of things, or could put it into a spam folder or something like that. So all of these things are done in a way to at internet speed, provide information to make decisions about what to present to users when it comes to things like search results, or what to allow through for email, or what to allow for connections from one network to another. And I'm not going to read through the case. Everybody can read for themselves on this stuff. But if there's any questions on how this stuff is used or the like, beyond what I've described in the document and what I've just described here verbally, this would be a great time to ask those questions.
Thank you very much, Rod. So we'll just open it up for discussion and questions on this use case. Remembering that our goal is not to write perfect use cases, but rather to understand a lot of the key needs, different needs that people have for an RDS. So,
Chuck, no, this is Rod again. Let me just add to that. I mentioned it on my mailing, but everybody may have seen that. This use case was designed at a stage in the EWG work where we had kind of determined some things about having components like gated access, credentialing, all that kind of stuff as kind of base parts. So when you read this, you'll see things like, you know, there's a process involved where you have access rights and things like that, which don't exist obviously in today's system, right? But that's why I didn't modify that, because, you know, we'd have to totally rewrite the thing. So I just I left that in there. But that I also wanted to leave that in there pointedly, so it shows kind of the mindset of what you need to, what the what you need to do and the capabilities you might be able to take advantage of in a modern RDS system. So when you read this use case, keep that in mind. It is not a one-for-one kind of here is what we do today. It's a what we do today, but in the context of how we do it with a better RDS. Thanks.
Thanks for that clarification, Rod. And let me clarify as well that use cases don't need to focus just on what we have today. So uses can introduce us to things that a new RDS could facilitate as well. Andrew, go ahead.
Thanks. This is not in any way to suggest that the use case is wrong. But we've had a little bit of trouble in this group with distinguishing between, you know, what is we're trying to have happen and what we're specifying the new system needs to provide. So as long as everybody reads this with, you know, here are actually conditions that we're trying to achieve, I think that this is a great use case. But maybe it's just that my software engineering hat is not that easily removed. I read some of this as a kind of specification for system performance rather than something else, and I know that's not what it was intended to do. So I want to make sure that people don't read it that way. That what we're really saying is, like, there's only really it pretty much requires that you have this sort of differentiation in order to achieve this use case. But we're neutral as to how it happens. I think that's a fair description of what I'm of my reading of this, but maybe Rod can tell me whether I'm wrong.
Rod, would you like to respond?
Sure. Thanks, and I think that's a good observation, Andrew. And I think that your point there gets to my attempt at a clarification, at least, in how when in the process this was written up, because we'd assumed so some of these steps that are in here. We were talking about process and stuff. This gets into more, you know, as your software engineer ears were tingling, it actually is written more that way, and that's kind of my background too. So, hence the way it was written. But the goal here when I wrote this was about how to leverage concepts to accomplish this overall use case around reputation service, which is something that exists today. I mean, it's done today, and it's done by people hitting the Whois services that exist today, people hitting services like domain tools or others that store historical data, and then also combining that with looking at other things like the configuration of DNS, potentially services being offered underneath a domain. There's a lot of other things that go into a reputation service, but those things do exist today. This is written from the perspective of, okay, great, we know there's this thing out there that people rely on this information for. Here's how you would do it in a new world where you have these kinds of concepts that we'd agreed were important principles to have. And so it's kind of a how do you apply today's current use case in a potential future world. That makes sense to you, Andrew?
Yes, thank you.
Cool.
Yeah, and this is Chuck. Thanks to both of you. Any other questions or comments on this use case before we go to the next? Lisa?
Thanks, Chuck. And this is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. Just one quick question for you, Rod. Under data elements, you mentioned email addresses. But then you also enumerate some other contact information, like the phone number and the physical address. Are those other elements of contact information commonly used by reputation services, or is it primarily the email address associated with the registrant or the technical or administrative contact?
There are different levels. So most reputation services are fairly light in that they'll look at things like a registration date, perhaps a registrar. So if you think of the old, I guess still current under CommonNet, FinWiz, people have built systems designed towards that and still use them. And that provides a very valuable set of information. More sophisticated models will use more information. It's just more expensive to get more, and you have to use different kinds of machine learning and other techniques in order to manage that data over time. So it gets other fields become more problematic, whereas things that are tied more easily as unique identifiers and the like, they have to be precise. An email address, for example, has to be precise to operate, to work, whereas a physical street address, you can have misspellings or different spacings or things like that, and those can be inconsistent between different data, entries, so that's harder to work with from a processing perspective, so it's less common. But those are used by the more sophisticated models out there that people use. So it's kind of long-winded to say it depends.
Thanks, Rod. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Well, let's bring up the next use case, which I think is to investigate abusive domains. So if we can bring that one up, and we'll let Rod introduce that to us and give everybody a chance to discuss it.
Sorry, I was on mute there. Rod Rasmussen again. And this one was kind of focused on trying to find a potential owner/controller of a domain name, which may or may not be somebody who's intentionally abusing that. Maybe unintentional. Maybe unintentional. Their domain was hacked or taken over or something like that. That's why it says potential miscreant in the description. We've had other submissions that are similar to this. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on this one since we've had other stuff look other entries looked at this. Again, this is with that kind of futuristic look to it. So you might think about this might be a good mental exercise for folks to go to, thinking about, gee, if we had these concepts around gated authority, access with credentials and all the like that you would need to have to get this to get access to certain kinds of data, depending on who you are and what your state of purpose is, that leads you down that road. But that's getting a little ahead of ourselves, but in our current level, but that's just it's extra information for you. The idea here being is that I can kind of pivot my way through information so that, for example, if I know that I have a series of domain names, I can get information about who might be associated with that domain name, and then I might be able to take that some association there and then pivot to other domain names that they may be using as well. To basically build up, I won't call it evidence. It's more evidence is a legal term. It's more of information, clues, et cetera, informing your opinion about what you want to be investigating or taking further action on. Another important point to remember here too is that while we think, for folks not in the industry, you think of this as a law enforcement primarily activity. The vast majority of this kind of work is actually done by private sector individuals who are working for security companies or some of the kinds of companies I already mentioned, or are incident response personnel for banks or other people who get attacked a lot, quite a bit. So a lot of this kind of work is done in order to establish what's going on and who may be actually trying to do abusive things to an individual organization. That could be everything from a, you know, a top bank to an NGO that's being, is trying to, people are trying to hack into to get, dissident information and things like that. So it ranges the gamut. The people who are doing things like setting up malware or data exfiltration using domain names and things like that, these are the things you're typically investigating and trying to figure out what then put the puzzle pieces together. I'll leave it at that for now.
If I can hit that unmute button. Sorry about that. Thanks, Rod. And I'll open it up for questions and comments on this one right now, and I'll kick it off. Rod, is this one where would this be a use case that could be a case where the domain name registrant may not be the abuser, but their domain name is being used for that, or is this a this would that not fit this particular use case?
No, that could fit this use case. You don't know until you've actually gone in and looked at that. And part of what this is covering was, in the case you have an abusive registration, one of the things you want to be able to do is contact people who are actually not just in a kind of an ownership position, but maybe more the traditional technical contact, where if you think of the use case that we had as the first example, it was, hey, there's a problem with your domain name. It's doing something that's affecting the internet. Whether it's, it could be anything. There's traffic coming from it for some reason. You have to do something about it. It's misconfigured, and my DNS relies on it. Well, you have the same issue here. You need to you oftentimes want to get a hold of somebody. It may not be the registrar, because the registrar is in a separate category, but maybe somebody who's got some sort of hosting or other responsibility for the domain. And this ties back to some of the different contacts we had identified as potential contacts, optional contacts to have in the EWG's proposed RDS framework. And this tied that together, is that you need to actually be able to, if you are investigating something as being abusive, you need to be able to get a hold of different kinds of contacts for that domain in order to move that investigation forward. So, and that could be that, hey, somebody broke into your registrar account and took over your domain name and was spamming everybody. That happens, thousands of times a day, these days. So, obviously you may end up talking to a registrar, but you may also end up talking to a hosting company or somebody with a more, webmaster who built a website and maintains it. Those kinds of contact details are potentially obtained via even today in the WHOIS and then obviously in an RDS going forward.
Thanks, Rod. Andrew, you're up.
Thank you. I think that what Rod is saying here is critical in a couple of different dimensions, and I'm not sure how to capture this. I think that this is, I think that Rod is right, that what we're talking about here is a sort of different gloss on the same, on a previous discussion we had, but maybe that previous discussion didn't fully capture what it is that we're trying to get out of this, and so maybe attending to the way that this interacts with some of the previous use cases will help us. And that is, you've got sort of two really critical, maybe three really critical different entities associated with a domain name registration. One of which is the registrant. Who is it that holds this? And maybe what we need to do is work out some stories around why we want to contact the person who registered the domain. And then a second thing is the technical ones. If you're the technical contact of this, I need to contact you for various reasons in this particular case because you're spewing spam at me, but, you know, whatever. There is this technical issue. And then there's a third contact that shows up in some of the traditional approaches that we've had to this, which is the administrative contact. And it isn't clear to me whether the administrative contact is ever a thing that we actually need to reach out to, or is instead just a sort of administrative convenience that has been registered already in the registries involved with this. And I think that, you know, if we could highlight this question about registrant versus administrative contact, that would be a positively useful inquiry that we could make for what the RDS ought to do. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. Let's go to Alan.
Thank you. I think there are a couple of things in this use case that are really important. The first one that struck me is we've often heard the discussion, the argument, whatever, that if we really need information, then law enforcement will have access to it, and you can always go to law enforcement and get it if someone is doing something nasty. The real world case is at much of the time, the investigation is done before you're in a position to prove to law enforcement that something's going on, and an awful lot of the investigation is getting done not within law enforcement but within various other bodies. So I think that's a really important thing to remember as we're going forward. So this use case brings that up. The second one, I'm not sure if it's in the use case or ensued in the discussion, is that at times the registrant is not the malfeasant one, that their domain name is being used without their knowledge or control, and contacting the registrant is an important part of addressing the problem. So I think both of those are things that we need to remember as we're going forward. So I like this use case. I think it's a good one to make sure that we consider as we move forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Stephanie, your turn.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. My question is really, I agree it's a very interesting use case. I apologize for trying to make it more complicated. But I'd like to see kind of a bright line between what is within ICANN remit and what isn't. In other words, regulating the internet service providers and the companies that offer website hosting and management is not within ICANN's remit. And I realize this must get complicated because let's pick on two cows. They don't seem to be here right now. If I register my little domain with two cows and I hire them to do all the website management and, you know, all the rest of it, security and everything, if you're Rod and you're going in to investigate when my domain gets taken over, who is will lead you to the original registration, we hope, assuming I still own it. But some of the data that you're looking for to help figure out who took it over is going to be held by two cows' web hosting area, not their domain registration area. Am I correct? And if so, isn't it important to draw these lines? Because jurisdictionally, it's different. And to the extent that any of this comes under the force of law in terms of evidence, there are distinctions, right?
Rod, would you like to respond to that?
Sure. Yeah, and I think those are important points. I think so. One of the, and this gets me to a comment I was going to make to the last thing Andrew was talking about as well. So, and in fact, this use case points out that using the information available in RDS isn't going to answer all your questions, but what it's going to do is give you pointers to who to go ask questions, right? So there's this concept of roles. And to expand upon what Andrew was talking about and what's implied here, but you need to actually put this back together with the EWG reports, is that we came up with we actually subdivided that rather nebulous concept of an admin contact that exists in the current WHOIS system into many more roles, depending upon what you look like as a registrant. So, for example, we had a legal contact. So, if there's legal matters to deal with, we had a DNS contact. If there's just DNS issues to deal with. Et cetera. Now, those are all listed as optional contacts, but in a large organization, those are ones that you would want to, that you may very well want to fill because you have different kinds of people who want to get a hold of you. One of those things would potentially be hosting, right? So you could say, hey, if you want to talk about who's responsible for my web hosting or for my email, it could be different, right? And often are, at least if you're a corporation or somebody who's got a fairly sophisticated need. If you're just an individual who's got their little website that's got, you know, pictures of kittens or you know, a little at-home business, you're probably using a turnkey service, and that's all one place. And so me as an investigator, it would make it great if I can go to a role where I can actually have an interaction with somebody who is responsible for that particular area. And if it's a turnkey shop, well, that's going to be obvious anyway. So for the most part, depending on the kind of domain and use you have and the kind of registrant you are, you can get the kinds of answers you're looking for by taking advantage of different kinds of contacts. So, I'm referring to things that were in the EWG report, and we haven't gotten to that stuff yet, but it's kind of inherent. This is one of the things the use cases drive. It's like, gee, it's you know, we want to be able to do these things, as Andrew was saying. It's like, when would we want to talk to the registrant? And then you start defining, parsing that, and say, well, we want to talk to them about these legal matters. Well, gee, the legal matters, that's really you want to talk to an attorney or to a general counsel or a legal representative of some sort. But it'd be great if I could designate that, especially if I've got things like privacy set up. So, hey, you want to talk to me about legal stuff like a UDRP thing? Well, great, here's my lawyer, right? I don't have to reveal who I am. Talk to my lawyer. Those kinds of things. So it starts getting you thinking about how to parse these different types of uses where you may need to make a contact with right now is a very limited set of people, and so you're jamming all these different roles into single things. And I'm way far afield from this use case, so I'll really here and move on. Thanks.
Thanks, Rod. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks. I think that's really interesting, and I think that we have frequently heard, I'm quoting someone here, so I won't identify who it is, that really what investigators need is one-stop shopping for the Internet. And I guess my concern is we don't want the RDS, from a civil society perspective, we don't want the RDS turning into everything having to do with your Internet presence. However helpful that might be for investigative purposes, I might have a reason for not going to Two Cows for my turnkey system. I may want, I don't know, Acme Human Rights Organization to be doing my web hosting. And that shouldn't be in the RDS. That should be somewhere else. So drawing the bright lines around here, that doesn't mean that if you, and I guess this is a question, I realize that a lot of big businesses are well served by having all of this information in one place so that it can be harvested electronically, subjected to machine learning, so that the instant that somebody impersonates Facebook or P&G, they get nabbed. Those are different things, and I wonder if it is appropriate even for ICANN to be managing an RDS system that permits that kind of extensive expansion of the RDS. This is a hypothetical. I'm not accusing anyone of pushing for that at this point. This is a hypothetical.
Thanks, Stephanie. And, of course, that finding bright lines is probably going to be one of the fun things we're going to try to do. Whether we'll be able to find them in all cases remains to be seen. But good points. And I want to call attention to lots of good discussion in the chat, including by quite a few people who haven't necessarily spoken up audibly, but are making some good comments in the chat. I'm not going to try and read all of those, but let you do that on your own. So any other comments or questions on this use case? Lisa?
Thanks, Chuck. Lisa Fiverr for the record. Rod, I just wanted to ask a quick question about in the list of data elements, you have a few elements here that are not normally accessible through public whois today, such as the IP address that was used at the time of registration or credentials that the party that performed the registration might have used. Are those normally accessible to OPSEC personnel today? I understand that sometimes they're available to law enforcement, but can OPSEC usually get to that kind of information today?
Sure. Usually no, but it depends. If there's a terms of service violation or something along those lines, then you know, so in other words, somebody stole a credit card or impersonated somebody to create a domain registration, which happens all the time, right? There are, in that case, registrars typically have it built into their TOS. They can do whatever they want to with that information because you've tried to defraud them. And so in that case, one of the things, there's an organization called the Secure Domain Foundation, which has actually gotten a lot of that kind of data together and is providing that to registrars so they can, in turn, be on the lookout for fraudulent registration attempts, because one of the things they're doing is sharing information around who's, you know, the kind of credentials that are being used, or maybe an email address, or maybe even an IP address. You know, we use it like a VPN coming out of Germany, which happens all the time. There's a bunch of VPNs in Germany that miscreants use, and it's only bad guys use them. So it's like, if you know those IP addresses, I don't take their registrations because they're bad guys, and they're going to probably give me a stolen credit card. So that kind of information gets shared. And so an investigator can get a hold of that information if it's in that kind of situation and a registrar that shares that kind of information. Law enforcement can use subpoena process and things like that to get it in most cases. So that's, and remember, this use case covered that as well. So it wouldn't. So again, the RDS itself was not designated as the place you got this. The idea was that though you were conducting an investigation, so you're looking towards trying to get that kind of information, which might be available from a third party that is pointed to by an entry in the RDS, saying, okay, go here for this kind of information. Does that answer the question?
It does. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for the question, Lisa, and thanks, Rod, for the response. Any other discussion on this use case? Okay, this is Chuck speaking. I think all of you recognize my voice, but people in the transcript might not be able to tell, so I got to remember to say my name, too. So I don't think it's wise to start a new use case. We have one more that we were going to try and get to today, but I think it's better to defer that to next week. Rod, do you know whether you're going to be able to be on the call next week on the 23rd?
Yeah, I should be able to.
Good. If you're not, let us know, okay, just so that we'll try and make sure that the people who are going to provide the overviews are on the call where we line them up on the agenda. So we won't start a new use case. We will do two main things on our agenda next week, and that'll be a meeting at the regular time on the 23rd. We will certainly pick up the third use case that Rod presented, and we have some others that will be lined up for that one as well. And then, of course, before we even start talking use cases, we'll try and finalize our problem statement next week. But please comment on the red line problem statement on the list between now and our meeting next week. That way, when we get to the meeting next week, hopefully we'll have pretty good agreement on the edits, and that should be a fairly simple exercise next week if people participate in the meantime. And, of course, we want the people that are on this call to participate as well. So I think that wraps it up for today. Is there anything else? Marika, go ahead, please.
Yes, this is Marika. I'm cognizant that there are some questions in relation to plans for Hyderabad, or some people have wondered what the latest status is of that, so I thought it might be helpful to just to give a brief update on that. It's currently foreseen that the RDS-PDP working group will have at least a four-hour slot on day one of the meeting, which is Thursday, the 3rd of November. I think there's still some discussions ongoing on whether that will happen in the first part of the day or the second part of the day, and I think that's probably something that will need to be sorted out with the other PDP working group that will also be meeting that day. I know there are also some questions that have been raised in relation to visas, and I believe that further information on that will shortly be posted on the ICANN website. And I think there's also a webinar being planned for early September that will provide further details on logistics and any other questions people may have.
Thank you, Marika. And before I go to Stephanie, a couple follow-ups there. Number one, did you say the RDS-PDP working group would have a full hour slot, or did I mishear you on the first day?
Four hour.
That's what I missed. Okay, that makes more sense. Thanks. And then with regard to the visas, folks, I started mine yesterday. I really spent a little more time on it today, and it's quite involved. So don't put that off to the last minute. I understand it can take a while. I haven't gotten that far, but it's not your typical easy visa process. So if you're even tentatively planning on going, I would start working on the visa as soon as possible. Stephanie, your hand's up. Go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Stephanie Perrin. I hate to be standing between people and the door here, but as long as we're discussing a use case on reputation and the exchange of lists of folks with bad credit cards who are likely to have stolen a credit card, I just wanted to mention that there are plenty of precedents here in the, shall I say, meatspace world where data protection law prevented this kind of sharing, and the only reason that anybody's getting away with this is, A, it's not well understood, and B, the data protection laws have not been enforced in this respect. The actual emergence of data protection law in the province of Quebec in Canada and the civil code were fought on the backs of a bad tenant list that the Landlords Association wanted to share in places with winter like Canada. You can't kick a tenant out if they stop paying the rent in October. You have to wait till March. So tenants serially do this. And the landlords, logically enough, wanted to share the lists of these tenants. And that was a major data protection battle. And the same thing happened with bad cell phones, bad debt for cell phones. So I just wanted to put that in there, that the fact that this goes on does not necessarily mean that there won't be privacy battles fought over it. And that doesn't mean that I don't have sympathy for folks who get their credit cards stolen under these circumstances. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. And as I think everyone knows, one of the realities we're going to have to deal with and factor into our deliberation are data protection laws and how we deal with those in our recommendations. So thank you very much for that. Back to visas just a little bit. Marika pointed this out to me. The type of visa that is being recommended is a conference visa. And what my first reaction when I was doing my visa was to put business. And it's actually a little simpler if you do a conference visa, and it appears that that applies here, and that is a possibility. So I encourage you, check it out for yourself, but I do think that a conference visa is probably the easier way to go. It certainly saved one step on my process that would have been a very difficult step. So just another tip on that, and I'm sure we'll all get more tips, and the webinar will probably be very helpful in that regard. Again, they will be visa require. There's a little bit of information on visas, but it's kind of skimpy right now. In fact, I had to send off a question. But as Marika notes in the chat, more information will be available, and it sounds like there's going to be a webinar to encourage you to take advantage of that, even if you're just not sure you're going, so that you at least know the what you're going to need to do. Anything else before we wrap it up? Okay, well, thanks. I think a majority of us were at a not-so-convenient time. Some of you at really bad times, and yet the participation has been excellent. So thanks for the commitment. Looks like Fabricio's already sleeping. I don't blame you. You had a worse time than me. So everyone, have a good rest of the week. Remember to comment on the problem statement, and we will meet again next week. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you very much for joining, everyone. You may now disconnect your lines, and operator, please stop the recording. Goodbye.